This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. The Rocky Mountain Arsenal Wildlife Refuge Complex, right outside of Denver, is one of the largest wildlife sanctuaries in the country. But it didn't start out that way. During World War II, the Army set up a chemical weapons factory on that spot. The plant was producing mustard gas, napalm, an arsenal of deadly chemicals. After the weapon plant was decommissioned, the site was converted into a pesticide factory. It's not the first place you'd nominate for a wildlife refuge. So how do you bring nature back to a place destroyed by humans? And what does wilderness mean in the age of urbanization? That's what we're going to be talking about. Let me introduce my guest. David Lucas is the project manager for the Rocky Mountain Arsenal Wildlife Refuge Complex in Commerce City, Colorado. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira.
Let's talk about the cleanup for the refuge. It spanned over two decades ago. What was the process like?
Well, it's really been a robust process. As you mentioned, day after Pearl Harbor, they needed to create an arsenal in reaction to the World War II threat, and that led all the way up until 1987 when cleanup officially began of the Rocky Mountain Arsenal. So as you mentioned, about 20 years, they were characterizing the site, looking and investigating, and then cleaning up.
Well, what's that cleaning up? Is it literally digging things, plowing?
Exactly. With this site, most of the contamination was windblown, and they were scraping soils and putting those into large landfills and moving on so that the site could be restored. And that's what we've been focused on, is the restoration.
Yeah, now I understand that the bald eagle helped you put the cleanup in motion.
That's true. The bald eagle was an endangered species at that time. Thankfully, it's not any longer. But bald eagles were found on the Rocky Mountain Arsenal, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service began working with the U.S. Army in managing those eagles. And yeah, one of the bitter ironies of the site is that the persistent organochlorine pesticides that were produced there put the bald eagle on the endangered species list, and then those eagles found their way back and helped us to turn it into a national wildlife refuge.
Does it have something to do with the eggs being fragile?
Like exactly.
They used to, in Silent Spring, they talked about
exactly.
That.
Rachel Carson, who was a Fish and Wildlife Service employee, she was researching that, and the egg thinning from the DDTs and DDEs was the reason, one of the principal reasons that that species was endangered.
Wow, what a full circle. Yeah. How do you manage this area differently from a refuge that doesn't have a history of contamination?
Well, first and foremost, we're urban, and we're excited to be urban because we are a part of the National Wildlife Refuge System, 560 refuges across the country, one in every state. But most of those are rural, and that's where they've evolved. But this is an urban complex, 16,000 acres just outside of metropolitan Denver. And so how do we manage it different? I believe we try to manage it exactly as the same as we manage our other national wildlife refuges. And that's why it's neat, because we have millions of people that have access to this refuge and can see the work that we're doing there, and then understand why we're trying to conserve fish and wildlife in their habitat.
Is there an indicator, you know, the canary in the cave that would be for an open prairie like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, during the Superfund cleanup, the Fish and Wildlife Service was responsible for biomonitoring, which they looked at the animals that were out living in the dirt, prairie dogs, various bird species, badgers, the fish that were in the lakes, and they were able to use those to detect where those chemicals were and when those chemicals were cleaned up. It was pretty neat.
I understand the prairie dogs are a pretty good indicator.
They are. Yeah, they did a lot of work with the prairie dogs, which leads us to a pretty exciting part of our site. We have a great deal of prairie dogs, and they reside down in their burrows, and they're digging and moving around the site at all times. And we're currently exploring reintroduction of black-footed ferrets, the most endangered mammal in North America, at this site.
Because they feed on the prairie dogs.
Exactly.
Wow. I hate to say it this way, kill two birds with one stone. Not the best way of putting it, but you'd be feeding the ferrets.
Exactly. Well, the food chain is a big part of the business we do, and having top predators is one of the most important things that you can do to restore natural ecosystems.
Now, speaking of that, I know you're bringing the natural prairie plants and the animals back to the area, and this includes the bison.
Yeah.
You took our producers on an off-road hunt for a herd of bison, and this is what it sounded like.
We are just leaving, and we are going to go out, actually, where the public can go on our tour route and look for some bison. So I will have to hop out of the car and open the gate here. You just entered the bison pasture. They hang out in a lot of different places, and they have a very much a ritual. Bison spend a little bit of time once or twice a day getting water, and they are on the move the rest of the time. So they're on the move right now somewhere. That was a bison wallow that we just drove through. It's an area where they generally get water, roll, hoof around in an attempt to kind of preserve water there in the future. So they looked like they were further up, so we're going to have to probably go down here and then take a right. Oh, there's one. No, that's a bush. Darn. Oh, there is one. We've got one on the right. So, yeah, we've got a yearling over here to our left rolling around and creating a dust storm. And to the right, we've got two males walking the other way. His head is probably about 5 feet across. He's looking directly at us. He's got the dark, mature head with the tan, more tan brown body. And there he's going now. He's going to start trying to catch up with his rest of his crew. Oh yeah, look at what, so we're just coming over a hill and there's about 50 bison here. I can see dust from bison rolling. I can see calves running around the edges. So that male just pushed a female out of the way because she was blocking his view of us. But this big bull right here is not as happy with us. Yeah, he's a little big and I'm gonna move a little bit. The reason that we have bison here, you know, there's a couple reasons. I mean, number one, we have them here to help us with our restoration program. So they are out here working every second, you know, eating grasses. The other reason we have them is they're awesome. They're superstars. They help us to connect with a lot of people. When I started, it was all about protecting habitat. And if we protected enough habitat, wildlife would thrive and everything would be okay. But we've learned now that if we can't figure out how to get kids right now to care about wildlife, conservation ends.
And that's fascinating. And kids do show up to watch.
Oh, yeah. Currently, we have about 30,000 kids a year that come through in formal programming. But we have 120,000 kids in schools just adjacent to the Rocky Mountain Arsenal National Wildlife Refuge. So there's a lot more work to be done. But to me, that's where it all starts. Basically, all science and everything that we all invest our careers in is can be found in nature. And if we can get kids to get excited and get outside and get disconnected from the various devices, I just think it's, well, I think it's an essential part of being a human. Obviously, we all are, as humans, evolved over tens of thousands of years. And just in these last 30 to 40 years, we've become so disconnected from everything natural.
That's interesting. So, yeah, we're doing our electronic objects, right?
Right.
But the kids will come out. Families do come out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get a lot of families. And, obviously one of our goals right now is to increase visitation and the accessibility of that. We had just 23,000 visitors in 2012, and last year we had over 300,000. And
wow.
We're expecting to have over 1 million visitors a year.
And what are they coming out to see? What's the attraction?
I think a lot of things. One, proximity. Being an urban national wildlife refuge, they can get there. But I think people do recognize, families do recognize that they need to get their kids outside. And it needs to be someplace that they feel comfortable and they can do that. These baby steps of moving into nature. And so they come out and they look at the bison, they look at the eagles, they look at the raptors, they look at the songbirds, they look at the grasses, they look at the fish, the frogs, anything.
That's amazing because here you are in Colorado, surrounded by, you have Rocky Mountains, you have all this wildlife out there, and yet they are still coming to see your place.
Yeah, and I love that because I think the prairie ecosystem and the grassland ecosystems are far more exciting than those big mountains to our west. Mm-hmm. But those big mountains to our west are what draw people to Denver, mm-hmm. and that's why Denver's probably one of the largest growing cities in the nation.
Mm-hmm. So what would you like to do next? What kind of changes, improvements, whatever would you like to see?
Wow, that's a huge question.
You're giving me the blank check, too. Because I don't have it. I can give it.
You can give it. To me, I really would love for us to continue to build our partnerships with the schools and with all of the conservation organizations. This is one thing we're lined up on, and we're not always lined up, but everybody is lined up right now and agrees that what we have to do right now together is figure out how to bring kids out, get them excited about the outdoors, and get them excited about nature, not only for their own health, just up and moving, amazing, but also mm-hmm. that those kids will be the future conservation leaders. So anything that we can do with that blank check to get more kids the ability to get out and have positive experiences, I think that would be awesome.
And any modifications or improvements to the refuge at all? Would you like to see?
Well, in planning for those million visitors a year, right. we are doing a lot of planning. And so there's a lot of infrastructure that goes into that, into protecting
right.
The main resources that are there that people want to enjoy. And that's a big part of our job, is making sure we have that balance.
So you don't have too many people trampling
exactly
the wilderness.
Yeah. So I think through planning, we can, you know, we can get people to the right spots, and we can allow people to come in and enjoy while also protecting the National Wildlife Refuge and its resources.
How big a herd of bison do you think you have now?
Right now, we have 84.
84?
Mm-hmm.
Aiming for?
Eventually, 220 is our maximum capacity.
Mm-hmm. And could they turn into bison meals for people if they get too many?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, we have to do population management.
Right.
They will continue to breed. When we have 200 animals, there'll be 40 to 50 calves per year. And the Fish and Wildlife Service can access those animals. And most of them are going into other conservation herds.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
You move them around.
Yeah, but
don't confuse a bison with a buffalo.
Exactly.
The nickel is not around anymore.
No,
to show
not.
People what a bison really looks like.
But it is the centerpiece of the Department of Interior's
right.
logo. It is
right.
it is the iconic prairie species, and like I always say, they deserve a spot somewhere in the United States.
Well, and you've given them a spot.
Yep.
The Rocky Mountain Arsenal Wildlife Refuge Complex. I'm talking with David Lucas, who is the project leader. Thank you for taking time out of this holiday.
Thank you.